Week 1. Greater Plans. Moving Heaven and Earth. There's a question that some people who think they're clever like to ask. Could God create a rock so big that he couldn't move it? If you say no, then God is not all-powerful. If you say yes, then there is something that is too big for God. What witty people. It's a silly question. Something actually worth thinking about is this. Is there anything in heaven or earth that will prevent God from doing what he desires to do for the good of his creation? The answer is plainly no. In fact, he will move heaven and earth if he needs to. In the time between Zephaniah and Haggai in 586 BC, only a few years after Zephaniah prophesied, judgment from God did come to Jerusalem. The temple of God was raided and demolished by the invading Babylonians, and the majority of the people of that city were carried off into exile, far from home. Only a few of the poorest were left to work the land. Some leading people, many who had led God's people astray, were executed. The impact of this devastation cannot be overstated. It's hard to imagine what it must have been like to live through it. Something that may be hard for Christians today to fully grasp is what the destruction of the temple of God meant to the psyche and the life of the Jewish person of that day. It struck to their very identity. Who they were as a people had been torn apart as much of their population was ripped away from the place that God himself had given them. All seemed hopeless, but God had greater plans than anyone could see. One major theme re-emerges in the Minor Prophets that I hope you've been able to see by now. God works to redeem what was broken and lost. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number 1. In returning his people back to Jerusalem, God moved heaven and earth and worked in the lives of pagan kings to do it. Though previously judgment had to come, nothing would stop God from redeeming and restoring his people. Have you seen in your own life or in someone else where God restores someone to faith and abundant life against all odds? What is that story? Number 2. In Jesus today, God surely works to redeem what was broken and lost because of our sinful choices and turning from him. What does it mean to have the word redeemed as part of our identity as Christians? The God of the Old Testament idea. I've had many conversations with people who have been convinced one way or another that the God of the Old Testament is a mean and nasty God. In their minds, Jesus is nice, but God is mean. In fact, some have felt strongly enough to use language only fit for R-rated movies to describe God and the Old Testament. Many of these people are college educated and would consider themselves of average or higher intelligence. My experience also has found that these same people don't know much about the Old Testament, God, or the Bible in general. That's not always the case, but I will say that oftentimes the problem they have with God is a personal one, not an objective one. They may have been taught to be offended at the biblical posture that goes against the pop culture grain. Let me offer one point to consider here. Jesus was a force to be reckoned with for the religious leaders of his day. Those in positions of power or influence with Judaism of that time would prod Jesus with questions on the law of Moses and on moral issues. They weren't always asking because they really wanted to learn from him. Often, They were trying to trap him or place him in an unfavorable light politically and socially. Jesus was asked by one of these leading figures in Matthew 22 to give them his idea of what the greatest commandment was in the whole law of Moses, which is included in what we call today the Old Testament. Jesus answered in verse 37, quote, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." Close quote. Jesus himself said, quoting from Deuteronomy and Leviticus, that the most important commandment was to love God with all you've got, and also to love your neighbor unselfishly. Love God, love people. Jesus then went on to add, quote, "All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Matthew 22:38. Jesus said that the whole Old Testament is centered around two commandments given by God. Love God, love people. If you don't read the Old Testament with these two foundational perspectives in mind, you will not understand the Old Testament at all. That includes our guys, the 12 minor prophets. Love is the gas in the engine. You're going to have to change the filter with which you view the Bible if those two commandments are not absolutely fundamental. Love God, love people. That being said, sometimes a simple reading of some of the Old Testament, especially the minor prophets, may seem to challenge those foundations. How we understand what love is can be the real issue here. Even more than that, how God understands what love is transforms everything on how to read the Bible. We'll unpack this as we go, but never forget to ask the question, what are these verses saying about how we love God and how we love one another? If you do that, you're way ahead of the game. Hold fast to those two greatest commandments. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, have you heard or talked with someone who had negative views of God because of what they thought about the Old Testament? What could you bring up and discuss that might help them understand God and His ways better? Number two, have you seen people abuse the love of God and Jesus to excuse ungodly behavior and to reframe God's words in Scripture to support another worldview? How so?